WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As you start preparing your 1989 tax forms, you might be interested in knowing that there was a 1966 Treasury report that addressed how the government could keep collecting taxes after a nuclear war. It's quoted in David Burnham's new book, A Law Unto Itself, Power, Politics, and the IRS. Burnham is an investigative journalist who has written about law enforcement and privacy issues. His reporting on police corruption, based on information from Frank Serpico, helped create the Knapp Commission. Burnham was the New York Times reporter Karen Silkwood was on her way to see when she died in a car crash. David Burnham has concluded that the IRS is the single most powerful instrument of social control in the U.S. When he was researching his book, everyone kidded him about how he was sure to get audited. I asked him if he seriously thought he was more likely to get audited because he's written a book critical of the IRS.
I don't think so. You know, first of all, I've been a working journalist all my life, and so I've, you know, had the W-2 form and not very much outside income, so there's not much that could be done. But I want to say that it's, you know, almost every person I talked to while working on this book for the last 3.5 years has asked me that question or made a little joke about hope you have a good accountant or hope you've kept your affairs straight. And it strikes me that that is an incredibly sort of discouraging survey finding of what the American people think of their agency, that so many would make that joke that implies they think that the agency would do that, does not speak very well for the agency.
Well, let's talk about what you've actually learned about how the IRS decides who to audit. First of all, you point out that really more mistakes are corrected now through IRPs, Information Return Program slips. What's the difference between an audit and the IRP, and why is the IRS heading in the IRP direction?
Well, the IRP program is very cheap. IRS has, over the last 15 or so years, gradually gotten all of the banks and all of the corporations and most of the any institution that's paying out money to send them records of the money that they pay me as an individual. You know, if I do a consulting, if I go to a university and give a speech, the university sends the IRS a notice that I got, you know, $400 to give a speech. The IRS takes these and matches them against my income tax return. Last year, the IRS got about $1 billion of those information returns, and they matched almost all of them, compared almost all of them with individual tax returns, 100 million tax returns, individual tax returns. And they send out notices if you forget or, in another way, don't put down that you got this income. And it's a very cheap, effective program to encourage full compliance because, partly because the corporations, of course, are paying for putting together the computer tapes that have the information on it. While this program has been developing, the IRS has gradually done fewer and fewer audits. At the present time, they're auditing less than 1% of all taxpayers. At the same time, they're matching everybody, and for about 40 to 50% of the population, all of their income is gained, comes from sources that are reporting to the IRS. So they're really in a position to do a complete audit of, and they are in fact doing an automatic computerized audit of 40 to 50% of the population.
Well, you interviewed the head of the examination division of the IRS, and he told you that they tried to select for audit the most non-compliant returns. Does that check out with what you learned through your investigation?
Not entirely. The IRS has an elaborate computer system that selects a large number of returns for audit. In fact, this computer system selects 3 or 4 times more returns than the IRS is able to audit in any given year. a stack is then sent to one of the 63 district offices. There are 63 district offices across the country. And then a sort of eyeball selection is made by individual agents and supervisors. Now, one would hope that most of those decisions are made on sort of experience and instinct and, you know, feeling that this is a person that really ought to be audited. But we know of cases where the decisions are made not for that reason, but for, you know, because a particular IRS agent has gotten mad at someone.
My guest is investigative journalist David Burnham, and we're discussing the subject of his new book, A Law Unto Itself, Power Politics and the IRS. The audit has over the years been used as a way to get criminals who have been resistant to other means of prosecution. This dates back to the days of Al Capone, when, you know, they couldn't get him and they finally got him for tax evasion. Do you think that it's a decent use of the IRS?
The Capone investigation was a very effective one and done against a true monster, and it worked, and it was done with restraint and, you know, totally within the rule of law. Historically, however, the idea that the IRS can solve broad social problems like organized crime or gambling or drugs over and over again has led to specific abuses of power. During the Kennedy years, Robert F. Kennedy wanted the IRS to go after organized crime and really huffed and puffed and pushed them in that direction very hard. And the IRS ended up conducting quite an extensive and improper program of electronic surveillance, eavesdropping on the telephones. The narcotics, the effort to use the IRS to go after narcotics during the Nixon administration actually led to the improper seizure and of all the assets of people who were not narcotics dealers. The problem is that the IRS, because it's such an important function, has been given incredibly vast powers, and it is not checked by the courts in the same way that, say, the FBI is. It has more legal power than the FBI, and this lack of checking leads to these occasions when the abuse has been, you know, really awful.
One more question about organized crime. How much does the IRS, if at all, still use the audit as a way of getting mobsters and drug dealers?
Well, the program, half of the work that the Criminal Investigation Division does is called the Special Enforcement Program, about half of it, and is supposed to be aimed at major crime figures. They indict a very small number of people each year. It's something like about 2,000 a year. And so about half of that are supposed to be major crime figures, but the GAO found that many of the quote major crime figures are in fact peanuts.
You describe the IRS as potentially the most powerful instrument of social control in our country because it's the institution that has the most information about all of us. What kind of safeguards are there to protect the computer data banks with information about us in it at the IRS?
Well, first of all, there are some very strong rules saying that the tax return of every individual will be confidential. And that sort of is a flat statement. However, the law then has a number of exceptions. The White House can look at the tax returns of people they're going to appoint. The two congressional tax committees can, and their U.S. attorneys can get the tax returns under certain safeguards. And that is very good. There are many agency regulations requiring very strict computer security. During working on the book, I was leaked a bunch of what are called internal audit reports by you know, an agent who thought I was doing the right thing, which shows that the IRS is very sloppy in the way they apply, they keep the security around, especially the local computer systems that each district office maintains, and that a lot of that information is very vulnerable to penetration by former IRS agents, by someone who was got a password. They could call in and actually get access to very confidential information very easily. There's a lot of sloppy sloppiness in the IRS's efforts to protect the computer files against penetration by outsiders.
I want to talk to you about a practical problem. A lot of us are busy now filing our tax returns for 1989, and I think everybody's experienced the difficulty of understanding what we're how you're supposed to go about it. You've cited several studies where, 10 different tax preparers are asked to fill out their tax returns for one hypothetical family, and they all come up with different numbers with, you know, a range of thousands of dollars from tax preparer to tax preparer. One proposed solution now is to have the IRS bill you. In other words, they get all of your income over the year, and they just send you a bill at tax time. You wouldn't have to compute it yourself. You wouldn't have to understand all the intricacies of the latest tax laws. What do you think of that solution?
It makes me very uneasy that we would hand over such an important part of citizenship to a bureaucracy. The IRS... the better solution would be to simplify the tax law. We have a situation now where the taxpayers don't understand the tax law, the tax preparers don't understand the tax law, and in fact, we have lots of evidence that the IRS itself does not under tax law. And what that means is we are not a country of laws. We are a country of men. It gives the IRS just an absolute arbitrary power to pick and choose who and how they're going to enforce the law against. And the most important thing that I hope will come out of the book is that Congress will seriously get to the business of simplifying the tax law so that we... both the enforcers and the taxpayers can understand what they're trying to do, what their obligations are.
What is the likelihood that this proposed solution where the IRS bills you, what's the likelihood that that would actually go through?
Well, they're pushing for it. And
who's they?
The IRS is pushing for it. And the IRS is gathering more and more information about each of us from more and more different sources. And because of the natural laziness of all of us, I think there may be a substantial number of the American people who say, hey, that's terrific, let them do it, then I don't have to bother with it. I find it troublesome, however, because, you know, this is a time when we reflect on... our obligations to government, and you sort of think about bureaucracies, which are such an important part of our life, and to give an agency that has done so poorly in accurately keeping track of its own affairs this power over our affairs, I think it's, I really think it's a seriously wrong direction to go.
Mm-hmm. You quote a 1987 American Bar Association report on tax compliance. And the report concluded that IRS emphasis on punishment ignores the role of honest mistakes. Now, on the other hand, though, if there wasn't some kind of penalty for filing inaccurately, don't you think a whole lot of people would try to pay as little as possible on their taxes?
Yes, I think you have to maintain the punishment part of the IRS to a certain degree. I feel, however, and interestingly enough, I was talking to the new commissioner, Fred Goldberg, the other day, and he agrees with this, that the IRS is obsessed with catching, you know, tax cheats and heading that off, and they spend an overwhelming part of their budget on that. And Mr. Goldberg said that he felt that the IRS should put much more emphasis on helping compliant taxpayers you know, pay what they want to. He made the point that most taxpayers feel they, you know, have an obligation to society and they want to do it, and that the IRS itself has put many hurdles in the way. You know, those surveys that show that one-third of the time when you call the IRS and ask them for information, even about simple tax questions, the IRS gives the wrong answer. You know the stories of people who've gotten wrongful notices, you know, and Mr. Goldberg was emphasized over and over again that he felt that much more emphasis had to be put on helping the, you know, the honest taxpayer pay his share, and that that would bring in probably more revenue than trying to, you know, bring stricter enforcement against the very small number of Americans who really, you know, actively try to cheat on taxes.
What other reforms would you like to see in the IRS?
Well, one idea, I mean, first, simplify the tax law. Second, try to change the mindset of the IRS away from enforcement, and make it help, 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 and then enforcement. The third thing we might think about is the IRS is in charge of granting tax exemption to, you know, groups that want tax exemption. That means, in effect, that the IRS is in charge of charity. It seems to me a good question. Does it make sense to have an organization that thinks of itself as an enforcement agency running the charity business? Wouldn't it make sense if you could devise a structure of really distinguished, you know, church leaders and labor leaders and business leaders and educators and what have you, making decisions, the broad policy decisions of what kind of charity we want to approve. And at the same time, when you moved it out, you would remove all secrecy, any kind of secrecy from the tax-exempt area. Everyone who applied for a tax exemption, that would become public. There, if there was a challenge to it by someone, you could have a hearing and get the IRS out of the business of controlling charity. It seems a very bizarre thing to hand to, you know, sort of the number one police agency of the United States.
What kinds of reforms would you recommend to prevent abuses, abuses in terms of confidentiality, abuses of investigative power?
Well, one thing that has just happened very recently is that the IRS has a special division called the Inspections Division that is responsible for investigating corruption within the agency. Within the last 10 years, considerable evidence has come forth that this Inspections Division has had great difficulty in investigating allegations against senior IRS officials. Just a few weeks ago, the IRS announced that the investigation of senior IRS officials from now on would be handled by the Treasury Department rather than the IRS itself. That's a good beginning. I think the Inspections Division has to be increased. In recent years, the size has been allowed to decline, even though the IRS has grown enormously. And this willingness to bring in some outside blood in the sense that have outside investigators look at allegations against senior people is very important, and it's the first time the IRS has sort of done that.
What kind of grades would you give George Bush so far in the area of taxes?
Well, the new man he's appointed is an interesting man. He is a tax lawyer like many of them. But he was he taught political science and economics at Yale for a while. So he has perhaps a wider view, you know, a broader view of what needs to be done with this organization than some of his predecessors. That's a good sign. To really get at this problem, though, I think you need a major national panel. I think you need much more intensive oversight by Congress. You need citizens that will cast off the cynicism that has led so many of us to just accept what this agency is doing. I mean, one-third of the answers they give people on the telephone are wrong. If your utility or, you know, your department store or Hertz or Avis or American Airlines, you wouldn't accept it. It's unacceptable. And we have to, you know, stop being cynical and saying that's the way it is. And we have to demand better service from this agency.
Where does that figure come from of one-third of the answers they give on the telephone are wrong?
That has been documented by a series of general accounting office reports that go back to 1975. And every time the GAO announced that one-third of the answers are wrong, the IRS promises that they will do something about it, and they haven't done anything about it. That gets to this question of their emphasis on enforcement rather than helping the taxpayer.
Well, David Burnham, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
David Burnham is the author of the book A Law Unto Itself, Power, Politics, and the IRS. It's published by Random House. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.